We begin in Sudan, where the local time now is 9 a.m., and people are bracing for a 10th day of violence and trying to escape it. These are live pictures from Khartoum, where things do appear to be calm for the moment. The days of fighting between the army and the country's biggest paramilitary have killed over 400 people and forced thousands of Sudanese to flee their homes. Now, more than 10,000 of them have crossed into neighbouring Chad. The World Food Programme says that number could rise to 100,000. Well, joining us on the phone from Chad's capital, N'Djamena, is freelance journalist Carol Vallad. Carol, you were embedded with the World Food Programme at the border with Sudan, so you've seen the refugees fleeing firsthand. Tell us what you saw.
Well, thank you. What I saw is people coming across the border every day. So the number of refugees is increasing very rapidly. We don't know yet exactly how many they are because the NGOs are still counting them. But according to local sources, there are already more than 20,000 of them. And they are surviving in desperate conditions. It's the Sahel region, so you have to imagine it's a very, very dry place. It's almost barren. There is almost no shade, no place to take shelter. And the temperatures, they rise above 44 degrees. So the refugees there, they are lacking everything basic. They have no food, no water, no sanitation, no shelter. And the only place to get water is on the other side of the border. So they are currently sitting in the open air. And when I was there, I met a young woman who just gave birth to two babies, twins, almost on the bare ground. So fortunately, the Chadian army is here to protect them, and the humanitarians, they are struggling to help them, but they really lack money to do so. Mm. So they absolutely need a new funding.
You mentioned babies. I wonder if you could tell me a bit more about the makeup of these refugees. Is it mostly families fleeing, or are there lots of young people? I mean, what are the stories they're telling you as to why they've decided to flee to Chad?
Yeah, absolutely. There are mostly families, many women and many children on the who came across the border. The story they told me are mainly about the fear when the conflict started and the fighting started around their homes. They had to flee because the Sudanese army in the region left them behind. They flew, and some of them crossed also the border to Chad. And some others, so the attacks on police stations, they told me about lootings, and also there was one village that was burned.
And which parts of Sudan are they coming from mostly?
They are mostly coming from Darfur, which is the region in Sudan at the border with Chad. And most of them are coming from the villages just next to the border, so very close to Chad. Because in the main cities in Darfur, there were still fighting going on. So most of the people in those cities, they were stuck at home and just couldn't move. But all the humanitarians in the zone, they all say that as soon as the fighting, they lower their intensity, as soon as the fighting stops, then there will be thousands and thousands of refugees taking the road to Chad.
OK, I appreciate your time. Freelance journalist Carol Vallad speaking to us there from Chad's capital, N'Djamena. Noon Abdel Basset left Sudan for Egypt on Saturday. She described what it was like fleeing the violence with her family.
Getting out of Sudan was not an easy decision to make. It was not an easy journey. What I would recommend to my sisters and brothers that are trying to flee Sudan right now is you need to be brave. Please take care of each other. Don't carry too much money or too many clothes. Pack lightly. Make sure you have plenty of food and plenty of drinking water. The journey is really, really long. And when you think about it, just go for it. Don't think of the what ifs. Just please try to get out and be safe. Getting out of Khartoum was definitely the most difficult part of this entire journey. Having to go through these checkpoints where you don't know whether you're going to be robbed or killed or Holding my mother's hands, looking into my grandma's eyes, just all holding each other's hands and praying that it all goes smoothly. I would say that even though it was the shortest part of the trip, it was definitely the most nerve-wracking. The situation has just gotten so much worse in the last few days. People have completely run out of food, clean drinking water. The hospitals are almost at zero capacity. They're completely not working. There's no petrol. People can't move around. Even evacuations, like when we evacuated, it was way much easier. It was smooth. Even at the border, there weren't that many people, but now these borders are filled with so many people, and it is turning into a full-blown humanitarian crisis that needs to be stopped. A ceasefire needs to be put into place, and the people of Sudan need to be evacuated safely.
Well, the chaos has also triggered the evacuations of foreign diplomats and their families. Planes carrying French, German, Italian, and Spanish nationals have landed recently. More countries have announced evacuation plans in the coming days. Now, with Khartoum's international airport closed, foreign governments are looking elsewhere in the region to get their citizens out. The Dongola local airport is one option. It's in the northern part of the country, closer to Egypt. And to the west, there's also the Shahid Sabera Airport. That's located in Sudan's Darfur region. Another possible evacuation route is through the Port Sudan International Airport. It's in the Red Sea province and a relatively short distance from Saudi Arabia's port city of Jeddah. Now, some roads that remain open can get people closer to Ethiopia, Egypt, and South Sudan. Land crossings with those countries have so far remained open. A lot of countries are looking to Djibouti as a logistical hub. The U.S. deployed forces there before launching evacuations in Sudan. William Paley is a former British ambassador to Sudan. He explains why evacuation from Khartoum is so complicated.
You have a contingency plan for evacuation, but the plans very rarely survive contact with the enemy. And this is a particular circumstances that wouldn't necessarily have been foreseen, that you'd have two heavily armed forces fighting in the streets of Khartoum. When I was in Sudan, the evacuation plan was to go by road in the event of the airport being closed, go by road to Port Sudan. But that's a long, it's a long way, and fighting is also continuing in other parts of the country. So in those circumstances, you have very little option but to resort to a military evacuation, which is what's happened in this case. And it was clear from here that the embassies were in the middle of a war zone, that they were being targeted. Normally, diplomatic missions can operate with a degree of immunity, but in this conflict, we saw attacks on the EU ambassador, we saw attacks on French and Americans. So the diplomats themselves were unable to operate, had to be evacuated. And ironically, with the diplomats out of the country, it's much easier to put pressure on the parties because you don't have hostages, if you like. The difficulty now is how to get British citizens out. That's a much more complex operation because they'll be spread all over the place.
Now, at least 60 people have been killed in an attack in northern Burkina.